Get out your hankies for the film that director Frank Capra and star Jimmy Stewart both called their personal favorite. It's a Wonderful Life relates the tale of a man who, after sacrifice, hardships, and near suicide, learns what a positive impact he's had on the world. Sherry Zeck, Associate Dean of the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University and GLT's culture maven, says the enduring popularity of the film can be attributed in part to the fact that when It's a Wonderful Life was first released, it was a failure.
It did not win any Academy Awards. It didn't do particularly well at the box office. And so the copyright lapsed on it, which means when the copyright lapsed in the 70s, TV stations could pick it up for nothing and play it over and over and over again. So like all those other great Christmas things that folks grew up on, from The Grinch to Charlie Brown to my personal favorite, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, It became a classic. It became a thing to do at Christmas time.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right.
So that's part of it. It got hardwired into us in a way by those frequent Christmas time showings. And then the fact that the story itself is terrific. The actors are terrific. It's a well put together little movie. I think all of us wonders what their life would be like had they taken a different path. Sometimes thinks to themselves, why couldn't I have taken a different path? And I think everybody also wonders what the world would be like without them.
Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, right?
Suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
So this is a nice little reassurance that while the other path might have had different opportunities, there also would have been a dark side to that path, and that we really are necessary to each other's lives.
I like the message of doing what's right. And its lasting effects.
Right.
You know, George Bailey makes sacrifices, and that is for the good of so many people. And that's not a message we hear as much these days.
And people that he doesn't even see or doesn't even know or doesn't even realize the long-term impact. That has incredible resonance.
To my big brother George, the richest man in town.
But also, many of us are concerned about the power of banks. Many of us are concerned about places in the world where singular people have an inordinate amount of wealth and power and therefore control. I think for a lot of folks this season, it has a special resonance in that regard. And the good guy has a good life. I'm not quite going to say the good guy wins because, like that other favorite, The Wizard of Oz, the problem is not really resolved. I mean, yes, he has, in the end, from all these donations, the money is restored, but the accusation of theft doesn't go away just because the money reappears. Just like in The Wizard of Oz, yes, Dorothy gets back home to Kansas, but Toto's still on the firing line. Because the general impetus of wanting to see George happy with his life, reunited with his family, the savings and loan solvent again, is resolved, we sort of forget that other little legal thing and in the celebration.
And Mr. Potter doesn't get punished, except for George saying, Merry Christmas!
Hey! Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter!
Happy New Year to you! In jail!
That is a curious part. I think that's part of what makes it a very much a Frank Capra film. For Capra, the bad guys, they may get their comeuppance in some way, but they aren't necessarily completely rejected others in a film. This is a community, and this community also has not so good people in it. And it's the community, ultimately, that's preserved. And the savings alone and George Bailey and his friends, they provide balance to Potter and Potterville.
There is an aspect of the film that is almost noirish, and I don't mean necessarily the cinematography, although there is a wonderful use of light against shadow and that sort of thing. It has a feel of a post-war noir.
Well, yeah, I mean, our main figure, it has a moral crisis throughout. The pull between wanting to pursue his own desires and his responsibilities at home, and even his then countervailing desire to be with the woman he loves and the family he loves. That kind of moral crisis is common to noir, but there are some distinctions too. There is not hard-pressed to call Donna Reed a femme fatale or a noir fatale. The cinematography, too. I mean, the dream sequence or the what would have happened sequence is very much shot in a noirish style. And even at the end of it, when George is running down the street screaming Merry Christmas, it's shot day for night. It's with the snow coming down. That's not quite a rain slick street, but you kind of get the idea. Mm-hmm. So there is that noirish element. And I think that's very much a part of what makes the film more than just, oh, a happy little tale of small town America. It is, we do have a leading character who is dogged by something darker, by a wish to run away from it all. I mean, one of my favorite scenes, one of the moments that I think is absolutely brilliant is when George and Mary confess their love to each other as grown-ups, not as teenagers, and they're on the phone, and he, you know, they're kind of kissing, not really kissing, and then he basically shakes her and says, I hate you because I love you. I mean, it's this, I don't want to love you, but I do. I don't want to stay here, but I will. And Jimmy Stewart does a fabulous job with that. Apparently, they shot it in one take because they were, both actors were quite nervous about how this scene was going to play out. That's really a terrific scene, whatever kind of movie you put it in. But certainly, it shows very concretely that there's real pain at the center of this nice little life in middle America.
And I think that's interesting that we want a little bit of pain in our Christmas entertainment.
We do.
Do you find it interesting that the film was directed by Frank Capra, who was an immigrant from Sicily, and here he captures the essence of the American soul, not just in this film, but in a number of films.
Sure.
He certainly seemed to understand Americans.
It is often immigrants who come in and know our Constitution better than those of us who were born here. It's immigrants who need to actually take tests on such things. And I think for someone to choose a new nation, to choose a new way of life, these things are not done lightly. So there is an understanding of what am I getting myself into, what am I losing, that we see in a lot of directors and artists who are themselves immigrants or who are first generation children of immigrants. The notion of nation and of belonging has a special resonance for someone like Frank Capra.
This really seems to be something of, I wouldn't exactly call it a turning point, but an interesting moment in Jimmy Stewart's career. Mm-hmm. You know, we all knew him as that aw shucks kind of guy. And then World War II happened, and he volunteered. It was very important to him. That was a major part of his family history, that if there's a war, you go serve.
Right.
He did with distinction, really had his life on the line for a number of years, and then came back and basically felt like, I don't want to be doing those aw shucks movies anymore because it's a different world. I'm a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed to be a good role for him to, because this came out in 1946, to mm-hmm. for him to sort of launch the second part of his career.
Right. And we see him after this play a number of characters that have this darker side. Of course, the one that everybody likes to talk about is Vertigo. But he did a whole host of characters like that. He actually had much more nuanced roles than people tend to associate with him, and not just when he worked with Alfred Hitchcock.
You know, Steven Spielberg called this a five hanky movie, and I personally never watch it with mascara on. Is this something that is best to watch with others?
Oh, yeah. Movies are meant to be watched with other people. They are not sit at home in front of your iPad things. I'm not saying that I don't sit in front of my iPad and watch a lot of stuff. And that certainly film viewing has changed since 1946. But as I always tell my students, just because you can get a movie on DVD or stream it at home doesn't mean that's not that is the best experience for it. Because what's going on in the audience around you has a definite impact on how you respond to the film. Certainly a film like this, which is at its fundamental about the individual's role in a community, sort of says that maybe you ought to be in a community when you're looking at it. I don't care if you've seen this film 100 times on your TV set, go see it on the big screen, because it is a fundamentally different experience when you are in a movie theater and that big screen becomes the world.
That's Sherry Zeck, Associate Dean of the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University and GLT's Culture Maven. I'm Laura Kennedy.